Ryan Sotheby, former NHLer, writes at OilersNation.com, joins us. Suds, how you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good. Did you ever play goal when you played road hockey?
Oh, every time.
Were you any good?
Every time. Yeah, I was really good. Yeah, I don't know. When I was a kid, I think most kids get enamored with putting on the pads and the mask and all that stuff. And I actually wanted to play goal, and my dad would always tell me that I was an idiot. And you're too good to be a goalie, so he would never let me actually play in a game. And I guess it kind of worked out a little bit.
Yeah, see, that's funny because, you know, my brother didn't want his kids to play hockey, but his second son, Noah, really wanted to play goal. But as a dad, he's like, well, I don't want to tell him he can't play goal. So he's like, Uncle Jay, you're going to come watch? You're like, are you playing goal? He's like, yep, nope. Because I was like, well, I'll look like the bad guy. He's like, I'll watch you when you play forward or defense, not goaltender.
Yeah.
And, now he's not playing goal, so that's...
Save the pocket.
That's a big one, but... You know, it's tough. You know, I give all the credit for the kids who play. I still think in hockey circles, too many kids play goal their entire life at a young age. And, you know, I think it was Sean Burke we had on the show who said the biggest mistake most hockey associations make is they designate a goalie way too early. Every goalie should play every position. Everybody should play it a few times and rotate. They become better players because they understand the game more. And Burke right now might be the best goalie coach in the NHL.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about that before, but I mean, going back to minor hockey when I played, I remember goalies were, like you just said, even being a novice, we already had our goalies, and they came up with us, the Pee Wee and Bantam, and then sort of fell off a little bit, but that would make some sense and obviously help. The more comfortable you are in skates and skating around and all that, I sure it has to help you in the net as well.
Now, when you your road hockey skills, we were talking about it earlier, and you're a goalie. Did you when you played road hockey as a goalie? Did you wear a can?
Oh, I would think most of the time. I remember in gym class there wasn't one available, but if we're talking about tomorrow, if I was going to be there and be in goal, I would be wearing a can. Absolutely. Are you going to play goal and not wear a can? I play softball in the summers, and I'm one of the only guys that wear a can, and I can't believe people don't.
You wear a can in soft, like slow pitch?
Yeah, see?
What?
What? I'm on the hot corner taking grounders. Like, I want to get in front of the ball. I don't want to be backhanding it or... No?
Okay, so you play third base and you wear a can. Okay, well, see, I never played infield in slow pitch. So
I mean, if you're in the outfield, you don't need to.
And in goal, I played road hockey in goal like most kids until I took one red ball square in the junk. Done. I never played goal again. That was the worst pain of my life. I can still remember the kids on the street in Apache Crescent. There was Darren White and Courtney Clapperton, worst name ever. And... like, I was, like, I couldn't, they basically just rolled to the sidewalk and laid there for, like, 20 minutes. It was the worst. And I was like, don't touch me, don't talk to me. Like, it was the worst. Like, wasn't even crying. I was just in that much pain. It was awful. And I was like, I'm done. Threw the pads off and said, I'm finished. I'm never playing goal again. I never did.
So you're getting back in there tomorrow?
No. Are you kidding me?
No.
Hopefully Brownlee plays goal tomorrow, and I'll take nut shots at him the whole time.
True. Or up high too.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, he has a pretty big target. Brownlee is a goalie. He could just lay flat on the ground, and his head would still take up half the net. That'd be
very
unbelievable.
True, very true.
He'd be very good, actually. He'd probably be a solid netminder. I want to talk the Mike Ribeiro situation. You know, the Phoenix Coyotes, they don't throw around money frivolously, right? They got pretty tight pockets. Yeah. Right, they got alligator arms based on their ownership, and I understand why. They buy out Mike Ribeiro. Like, for them to buy him out, Suds, and I know you know Mike Ribeiro from playing with him. You know, this was a guy who clearly had some off-ice issues. And, you know, Maloney didn't mince his words. Right? He didn't go into detail, which I respect, but he just said, you know what, this guy wasn't productive on the ice or off of the ice. Do you think the Oilers would have rolled the dice on him, or is it too risky bringing in a player like that into such a young, unproven team?
I think with a guy like Ribby, you know, I would have been a little bit hesitant being the Oilers and bringing him in. And I say that absolutely respectfully because playing with him, he's a fantastic player. And in Dallas, I felt like he was a great teammate. He's a different guy. I mean, you can see just the way that he dresses and he has an earring and wears his hat sideways. And he maybe doesn't look like your prototypical hockey player. And But I feel like at times he gets a little bit of a bad rap, too, just because of that. And he's a guy that he likes to, you know, have fun off the ice. He's not a guy that he's not a rink rat. You know, you wouldn't see him come to the rink and spend 5 hours in the gym before warming up or whatnot. He's a guy that had so much talent, comes to the rink, he does his thing. And I always felt like at practice or in games when we put the skates on, he was committed. 110%, always was there to try to win. So I felt like he was a good teammate. He's a guy that was pretty quiet. He's reserved. He's not a guy that, you know, is going to pull a lot of people in different bad directions. But on a team like the Oilers, I think you want your older players to be guys that are going to bring the team a little bit closer together, where Mike's a guy that sort of goes off and does his own thing. And I think you want a guy that's going to bring the leaders of your group, especially with a young team. You want the rink rats. You want those guys sending the right messages all around the ice, nutrition, working out, being around the rink, watching video, whatever it is. But my time with him in Dallas, I felt like we had a good leadership group. We had a good, strong core. And I've never felt like he was an issue at all when we were there. And I think that's probably why a guy like Dave Tippett felt like he could have went out of his way and take a chance on him. Because he's a guy that he was a point-of-game guy when I played with him, and the good always far outweighed the bad.
Yeah, there's no one debates his on-ice productivity. This year obviously was his worst year in 8 years, and probably stems from some of the off-ice stuff. And you know, he goes to Nashville on a one-year deal. It is it's not like a diehard media market where he's going to have to be asked about it and probably watched as closely as he would in Canada. So I could see there being some trepidation on his side of things as well, having to overcome whatever the off-ice issues are in a Canadian market. That might be difficult.
Yeah, I think it's probably a good landing spot for him, just with how everything went down. And it's interesting. I mean, who knows what happened in Phoenix? I think when I was with him in Dallas, like I said, if you're making $5-6 million a year, but you're producing, guys are going to be allowed to do, you know, they're going to have a longer leash. And so in Phoenix, maybe there was some greater things that were going on that I'm unaware of, or people are actually unaware of, but Maloney came out and said, and his production was dropping. But at the end of the day, he still had 50 points last year. And if you're bringing in a guy that you did some homework on him, maybe there's guys, I mean, James Neal's in Nashville. I'm trying to think who else might have played with Ribeiro in the past. But if you did your homework and you've lost a guy, you have some holes to fill in Nashville, and you feel like your room can handle it, that Shea Weber's their captain, some stronger presences in that locker room, I think a team like Nashville, and with the hole they're in with losing Fisher, it could be a good spot for them with what they're paying them.
Ryan Sutherby joins us. To me, I didn't understand why some people felt like the Oilers missed the boat on Derek Roy. I don't see any reason why Derek Roy, at 31 years of age, small guy who's really lost a step, and his production has suffered the last 3 years. Like I'd roll the dice on Mark Arcabello compared to Derek Roy at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well. You know, as far as what this team needs, I think that a guy like Derek Roy is a lot of what they already have. He's a more offensive guy that focuses on offense. He's not a guy that's going to give you a lot of defense. And for a veteran guy and the way this team is and the guys that they have, I just don't think he really fits the bill. And I think I would roll the dice with Arcabello as well at this point. But I still think, and this is not rocket science, that they obviously need to fill at least one of those holes. One of the guys I really wanted them to go after was Legwand. Who knows what happened there? I'm sure they tried. I would have loved to have seen them even way overpay for him for a couple years, just because I think he's a good two-way guy. My wife's from Nashville, so I spent some time around the Predators team. I saw the way he was in their group, in their core, and still a guy that's mid-30s, can give you 40, maybe 50 points and be a two-way guy. I thought he would have been the perfect fit for the stopgap kind of player they're looking for that could help the young guys. I'm with you. I'm not sold on Roy being that guy.
Craig McTavish at this point now, We all look Anton Lander, Mark Arcabello, Leon Draisaitl. It's not great. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody argues about that. The potential in the future that Draisaitl could be very good. And Arcabello's still somewhat of a wild card. Maybe he's a real late bloomer who's never been given a chance, but it's still low percentage, right? If it's a great surprise, awesome. But it's still somewhat low percentage. The Oilers had so many holes, Brian. I don't think we could expect McTavish to improve all of them in one offseason. Or do you think he missed the boat by not improving the second line center rather than getting wingers and defensemen?
Well, I think maybe a little bit. I mean, what we're seeing now with just how depleted the free agent market is, and maybe he has something up his sleeve. There could be a trade there. But when you look at the Oilers roster, I don't really know who they have that they could really trade to bring in a real serviceable second-line guy or maybe even a third-line guy. Like, I'm just not sure what they're willing to dangle out there for that and if you're going to get good returns. So I feel like there was a little bit of a boat missed. Again, the market, it's always tough because you're right now in Edmonton, they're not a very good team. And a lot of people want to look back to the Pronger thing and say, oh, players just don't want to come to Edmonton. I don't buy that for a second. If the team is good, and has a chance to compete year after year, I think players will come here and want to sign in Edmonton. And look at Detroit. I mean, they don't have a problem signing veterans. They don't have a problem signing guys that want a chance to win. And Detroit is not a very nice city. And so I feel like they obviously have to overpay, and we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, how many guys they tried to bring in. But looking at it right now, not knowing the things they tried to do, I feel like that they could be in some trouble down the middle.
Brian Sotheby joins us. Yeah, they definitely will be in trouble down the middle. Right now, there's no argument against it. But when you're the 28th place team, I don't think you could expect to have perfect answers everywhere on this team, right?
No, and I will say, I mean, Arcabello last year, when he got a chance to play early in the year, and I've told you this before, that early in the year, the first 10, 20 games, there's a lot of teams trying out younger guys, a lot of guys that maybe aren't surefire NHLers getting their feet wet, and it sort of tightens up after that 20, 30 game mark. So it's hard to really gauge sort of what Mark Arcabello is in the NHL. But in the time that Gagner was out last year, I mean, he was a pretty good second to third line center wherever he played. It's tough when you look at the way the year finished and you saw him either in the minors or he got bumped down to the fourth line. I mean, unless you're something incredible, it's very tough to produce in 6-7 minutes a night. So I don't think that they're going to be able to compete with Mark Arcabello in the Western Conference as their second line center. I mean, you just look at the guys they're going up against. But I still think that he's a guy that can sort of hold his own, at least from what we saw. And I mean, if worse came to worse, I'd rather have Arcabello than, as we just mentioned, having a Roy or maybe bringing Ribeiro into the stress room as well.
You were at the Jays-Angels game last week. Jays had won the night before, and then they lost. Right? They lost when you were there?
No, they won.
Was that the game they won?
Dickey. I think he went 2 hits over 8 innings. He had a nice go there.
How is that stadium?
You know, it's not that good. I've been to some cool parks in Baltimore, and Texas is a really cool stadium. The way if you're in the infield, you're staring at the backdrop. It's a huge, huge stadium. I felt like it was a little bare bones. I thought the rocks, like when you see it on TV, I feel like in Anaheim it looks a lot cooler when you see it on TV, the rocks and the outfield and whatnot, but it's kind of small and almost bare bones, I felt. But nonetheless, it's sunny. The Jays were in town. It was a pretty good day. A couple hot dogs, a couple beers, so can't complain.
And before I let you go, Suds, just so you know, Matthew Iwanek said wearing a cup and slow pitch, even he thinks that's soft. Although there are a lot of guys saying...
Hurt.
There's a lot of guys saying that if you play infield on the diamonds in Edmonton, you're better wearing a cup, bad hops. So there you go.
That is true.
Like, that might be a new thing, because I know I haven't played slow pitch in 15 years, but when we played, not one guy ever wore a can that I knew of. I never asked.
I get irked if I see guys wearing batting gloves or like baseball pants, socks, but I'm okay with a can. I'm going to stick with the can.
Oh, that's, hey, there's nothing wrong with it, you know? Nothing wrong with that. Now, so you're telling me you never wore batting gloves when you played slow pitch?
Slow pitch? No.
Really?
I hope you can't find a photo out there.
I mean, no. Yeah, I was just about to say, something tells me you're the guy with the backwards hat, the can on, you're wearing the baseball pants with your socks, with the pants up to your knees and the high socks. Guaranteed.
Well, my style's impeccable no matter what, but no batting gloves. Come on. My wife wears batting gloves and I chirp her all the time.
Yeah, you probably tried to use an aluminum bat in slow pitch too, didn't you?
Isn't that what you use? What are you using, wooden slow pitch bat?
Ah, old school, man. That's the way to go. The natural.
You got to get back out there.
Come on.
It's too long.
The natural. No, we use the aluminum. You kidding me? But I use like a 27-ounce bat. I use as light as possible.
Yeah.
I was a slap hitter. That's all I was. Suds, have yourself a good day. Well, we'll talk to you Friday.
Sounds good, buddy. You too.